Thank you, Brother Elmer. Appreciate that. Okay, for our message today, I chose to speak out of Lamentations here when we had our outdoor service, the impromptu there. There was some negative things were said there and seemed sort of negative, and then Brother Stanley tried to bring us back onto the positive again, and that's good. It's good to have different things like that to cause us to think. And so God bless for each of you for sharing that Sunday. It was appreciated. So Lamentations, when you think about Lamentations, there's a lot of negative in Lamentations. And chapter 3 is actually the one, the chapter that I'd like to speak out of some. A couple of verses there for the most part. The year was 1866, which 100 years before I was born, actually. And in a log cabin in the little town of Franklin, Kentucky, Thomas Obadiah Grisham was born. Although he never went to high school or college, he became an elementary school teacher at the age of 16. 5 years later, he was named associate editor of the Franklin Favorite, the local newspaper. When he was 17, he attended a revival service led by Dr. H.C. Morrison and gave his heart to Christ. He served as a Methodist minister and later was an insurance agent. He lived for some time in Winona Lake, Indiana, and in Vineland, New Jersey. He was never in good health and was often an invalid. But during his lifetime, he wrote over 1,200 poems. In 1923, he sent a batch of his poems to William Runyon, a musician serving in the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. On a trip to Baldwin, Kansas, Mr. Runyon read the poems, and one of them so impressed him that he decided to set it to music. He published it privately, little knowing that it would become one of the most beloved hymns of the 20th century. And in 1953, George Beverly Shea introduced it to Great Britain during Billy Graham Crusade in Haringey Arena in London. Late in his life, Thomas Obadiah Grisham penned these words of personal testimony. He said, "My income has not been large at any time due to impaired health in the earlier years, which followed me until now. Although I must not fail to record here the unfailing faithfulness of a covenant-keeping God, and that he has given me many wonderful displays of his providing care, for which I am filled with astonishing gratefulness." That phrase, astonishing gratefulness, that should be the testimony of every child of God. That should be our testimony. The astonishing gratefulness that we have for what God has done for us. The hymn he wrote is based on our text, verse 23 in chapter 3 of Lamentations. Most of us know the words by heart. He simply called it, simply, "Great is thy faithfulness." And I like to sing that song at this time. I think it's on page 100. And thinking about the great faithfulness of God and challenging ourselves to what does our faithfulness look like to God. Shall we sing?
Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions they fail not. Summer and winter and springtime and harvest, sun, moon, and stars in their courses above, join with all nature in manifold witness to
Yes, amen. God's great faithfulness to each one of us. And it's sort of a paradox. There's something of a paradox in the way that we use this hymn. We sing it in moments then where we have experienced God's blessings. We're just grateful, just like this morning. I got up early this morning. The sun was just coming up, and just thinking about what a glorious morning. It's just been a blessed morning. Would I have been able to do that when it was rainy, dreary, cold, what we would call nasty weather? Would I have been quite as grateful and cheerful? It's just a challenge. We sing it at weddings and graduations, and at the end of the year, we look back and see how God has handled us day by day. We think about that as just, we're just so blessed. And we think about God's faithfulness. This beloved hymn, which has encouraged people, is a base for our text written during Israel's lowest moments. Did we think about that? This text that we, if we read Lamentations here, if you know what the word lament means, you know what Lamentations is all about. Written by Jeremiah as he sat amid the ashes of destroyed Jerusalem. His mood was bleak, his words dark and angry, his tone is one of near total despair. And for the most of this book, Lamentations, there's not much word about hope and light. There's just not much there. There's some. So maybe we'll read here in chapter 3. And I think he's not necessarily talking about him as a man, but as Israel, the man, collectively. He says there in verse 1, I am the man that hath seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He hath led me and brought me into darkness, but not into light. Surely against me is he turned. He turneth his hand against me all the day. My flesh and my skin hath he made old. He hath broken my bones. He hath builded against me and compassed me with gall and travail. He hath set me in dark places as they that be dead of old. He hath hedged me about that I cannot get out. He hath made my chain heavy. Also when I cry and shout, he shutteth out my prayer. He hath enclosed my ways with hedge stone and hath made my paths crooked. He was unto me as a bear lying in wait and as a lion in secret places. He hath turned aside my ways and pulled me in pieces. He hath made me desolate. He hath bent his bow and set me as a mark for the arrow. He hath caused the arrows of his quiver to enter into my reins. I was a derision to all my people and their song all the day. He hath filled me with bitterness. He hath made me drunken with wormwood. He hath also broken my teeth with gravel stones and hath covered me with ashes. And thou hast removed my soul far from peace. I forgot prosperity. And I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Remembering mine affliction and mine misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. This I recalled in my mind, therefore I hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, the soul that seeketh him. It is good for a man that should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. I think that's as far as we'll read there. When we come to our text there in verses 22 and 23, the light begins to break through. It's very dark up to that point. But what a challenge it is to all of us. There's always plenty of darkness, plenty of things going on around us that will bring us down. It's one thing to sing, "Great is thy faithfulness," at a wedding. It is something else to sing it when your husband announces he's leaving you for another woman. We gladly sing it when an operation is a success. Do we also sing it when we bury a loved one because the medical treatments didn't work? The text is not an answer to the mysteries of life. It is not about policies or politics or the circumstances we face every day. It's rather a word about the Lord. Our text declares that he is our hope amid hopelessness. Is he that for you today? He is our light when all around is darkness. He is the way when we can find no way. He is our reason for living when we would rather give up. In Malachi 3, verse 6, he says, "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed." The Lord does not change. And then also in Psalm 78, verses 37 through 41, he says, "For their heart was not right with him, neither was their steadfastness in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his anger," or his wrath. For he remembered what they were but flesh, a wind that passeth away and cometh not again. How often did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? Yea, they turned back and tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel." Things going on and not turning to God and trusting in him. This text here, these two verses, contain four phrases. And also each one brings up a question that I think we would like to consider. Number one is, why doesn't God destroy me? That's quite a question, isn't it? Why doesn't God destroy me? We all walk closer to the edge than we think. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't take much. There's a thin line between disaster and prosperity, joy and sorrow, laughter and tears, and life and death. There's just a fine line. A lot of us drive on the road a lot, travel, different things. In just a split second, a car can swerve over in front of you, and that's it. I think just yesterday I heard of a young man that was driving his tractor down the road, and a deer jumped out in front of him. And he swerved to miss the deer or something anyhow, and the tractor rolled and killed the young man. Things happen very quickly. We just, Nathan and Kathleen just flew back from Oregon yesterday, and just think about that plane flying along. If a tiny little switch would malfunction, that could bring the whole plane down. Or our brakes could give away. Or at this point in time, you know, a tiny little virus can take us out. COVID-19 has taught us that we are not in control of our own destiny. Let the microscopic virus invade our lungs, and we might end up in bed or in the hospital, or maybe on our way to the morgue. And who can understand the mysteries of the universe? We don't understand everything. We don't know exactly what all is going on. So why are we still alive today and others are dead? Why have we been to so many funerals and we have not been to our own yet? Jeremiah says, because of the Lord's great love is why we're not consumed. His great love for us. That's why God doesn't destroy us. Because of where we come from, what we're made of, human, our Adamic nature is totally bent to work against God. And too many times we yield to that. And God would have the right to destroy us because of how we have treated God, how we have disobeyed him. God would have the right to do that. But his great love for us is why he hasn't yet. Jeremiah says it's because of the Lord's great love. And the Hebrew word for love is hesed, a word rich with meaning. It means loyal love that will not let go because it does not depend on emotion, but on an act of the will. God loves us because he promised that he would love us. And nothing can cause him to break his promise. Have we ever thought about that? God's great love. Therefore, as bad as things are, if it weren't for God, things would be even worse. If it weren't for God, no matter how bad things are in your life, they would be much worse without the Lord. So let's think on the positive and not get consumed with all the things that are going wrong in our lives. We tend to forget that things would be a lot worse if it wouldn't be for the Lord. Many of us go through life with a sense of entitlement. I deserve this. I deserve that. Even sometimes when we pray, we think that I've been good, so the Lord has to give me this. Do we actually go quite that low to think that we're entitled to something, that the Lord has to give us something? How little we understand about God's grace. I heard about a pastor in upstate New York who was diagnosed with cancer in his early 30s. After extensive treatment, the doctors told him that there was nothing else that they could do. So they sent him home to spend his remaining months with his family. And they told him he could keep on preaching if he felt like it. So on his first sermon after his treatment, the pastor spoke on Romans 5, verse 8, concentrating on the little word yet. And that verse is, it says something about, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. All his life he had used that particular text to preach the gospel to the lost. But on that last message, he was preaching it to himself. It's a sobering thing to die young, because no one expects that to happen. Seems like that's why things are put off. That's why young people don't accept Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. It's because we're young. We've got a lot of life to live yet. But that's not necessarily true. God can cause something to happen and take us out. The big question is, are we ready? We don't have a lot of time. The pastor said that he had always thought that he had 30 or 40 or even 50 years yet to live. That meant that he had plenty of time to get rid of his bad habits and heal any broken relationships and to grow in his walk with God. But now there wasn't enough time. Slowly the truth broke through. He wouldn't have enough time to get better. He would have to face the Lord with all his faults, his flaws, with those bad habits still there, and with some relationships not healed. Time was not on his side. I think God will take us regardless, accept us into his fold, regardless what our past looks like. And God will help clean us up. God will clean us up. It will give us a different mindset to where we won't desire those things anymore, those things that we used to grab our attention and direct us. God can cleanse us from those things. He said he wasn't afraid to die, but he wasn't ready yet either. What had he learned from his ordeal? Chiefly, he had learned that he must depend wholly on the grace of God. It says here that it's of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed. His only hope of heaven was not personal improvement or spiritual growth. For the first time in his life, he understood the grace of God. Not just theoretically, but practically and totally. If God's grace wasn't enough, then he was in trouble, because there was not enough of time for a massive overhaul of his life. So what is our hope in the face of death? Our hope lies in the fact that God's grace reaches us while we were sinners and saves us as sinners. Once we accept Jesus Christ into our heart and life, we can live above sin. That same grace will take us all the way to heaven. And that's the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think possibly in many ways, the doctrine of God's grace is one that is hard to accept sometimes. We can tend to think that, well, we're not good enough. God can't use me because I am a nobody. But God's grace will kick in and take care of all of that. We don't have to worry about that. One day, C.S. Lewis happened to pass by a group of guys discussing which feature of Christianity most separated it from other religions. And without batting an eye, he responded, "Why, the grace of God, of course. That's what separates. Do you want mercy or justice? If justice, you'll have it and be sorry for it. If mercy, then you'll have it, but just remember, when you receive it, you don't deserve it. It's because of God's great love that we are not consumed already." The second question, how do I know God will keep on loving me? Just the second part of that verse 22 says, because his compassions fail not. The best part of the little phrase is compassions. It's plural. God's compassion is plural. He giveth more grace. In James 4:6, he says, he giveth more grace. Sometimes we seem like we're getting to the end of whatever, but then God gives us even more grace and helps us on through. Many of us have lost the sense of gratitude for our blessings. That's especially true regarding the simple blessings we receive every day. We take a lot for granted. There's just a lot of blessings that it's just expected, seems like. In the words of Andy Rooney, "For most of life, nothing wonderful happens." Is that how we view life? He goes on to say that if you can't find happiness in things like having a cup of coffee with your wife, which I don't do, I just don't care for coffee, or sitting down with a meal with your family and friends, then you probably are not going to be very happy. Or if you sit around dreaming about winning a big contract or winning something big, you're not going to be very happy. You're going to spend most of your days waiting for something that probably isn't going to happen. Meanwhile, the sun will rise tomorrow and you won't see it. A friend will say hello, and it won't matter. Your children will giggle and you won't smile. The roses will bloom. And because it's ordinary and you've seen it before, or heard it before, or done it before, because you're dreaming of the future, you'll miss it altogether. The future of this life. I think we need to spend more time dreaming about the future after this life. That will give us more encouragement. How blessed we really are, and how easy it is to forget what God has done for us. Pastor Ray Pritchard says, "I remember the day a fine-looking young couple came to me to see me. I didn't know them and didn't know much about their problem. After some discussion, the issue was out on the table. It was a genuine problem, but it was not the end of the world. And with some grace and patience, it could be solved or at least circumnavigated. I looked at the husband and saw his face contorted in a way that said, 'I'm not happy about this.' So I said, 'What do you think?' 'It's fine with me,' he said, which means it's not fine with me." He was not very happy with it. So as we talked some more, Things weren't perfect in their marriage, and he wasn't happy. Eventually, it came out that he had been cured of cancer. At that point, I did something I can't remember ever doing before. I stood up and looked at both of them across my desk. Raising my voice, I addressed the husband. "I spend my days talking with the sick and dying. I bury people every year who die of cancer. Look at you. You've got a lovely wife, a good marriage, wonderful children, and you've both got good jobs and a great future ahead of you, and you have been cured of cancer. Half the people in my church either have cancer or know someone who has it, and they are praying for a loved one to be cured. You are one of the fortunate ones. You have beaten the odds. Now you're unhappy because things aren't perfect. You ought to be down on your knees every morning thanking God for all of your blessings. God has been so good to you that you shouldn't complain again, ever." He smiled sheepishly and agreed with me. How blessed we already are, if only we could come open our eyes to see what God has done for us. His compassions never fail. And I don't think we have to be cured of cancer or anything major like that to come to that point. Just thinking about our own life, doesn't have to be something major happening in our lives to really see the goodness and the love and the compassion of God. If we just see ourselves for really what we are, sinners saved by grace. Number three, when will God give me what I need? And that's in verse 23. They are new every morning. How do we wake up every morning? What is our attitude when we wake up in the morning? I must admit that not every morning that I wake up, there's just a jump in my step. I must admit I'm human enough that that doesn't always happen. But God's mercies are new every morning. Here is a word of hope for us. God's mercies are new every morning. The expression of the children of Israel in Sinai wilderness illustrates this principle. In Exodus 16, we can read the story. It talks about how the children of Israel, they had crossed the Red Sea, and after that great miracle, they started grumbling. Does that sound like us? Everything goes good, and then something goes wrong, and what's the first thing we do? Start complaining and fussing about how bad things are. And we just came through a great blessing. They were out in the middle of the desert saying, "Why did you bring us out here? We had food, at least back in Egypt, we had food. They could eat. So we're going to starve to death out here." So Moses went to God and said, "God, I've got trouble with your people. So God said, tell them to get ready because I'm going to provide food for them." So the Lord sent the children of Israel manna and quail. The quail flew in at night. Numbers 11, verse 31 says, "And there went forth a wind from the Lord, and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on that side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth." That was a lot of quail. God's instructions were very specific. Also, the birds were 3 feet deep on the ground, seemed like in every direction. I don't know exactly how far a day's journey is, but that's as far as a man could walk in a day. That was quite a distance. In the morning, the Jews found dew on the ground, and when the dew evaporated, they found wafers. I guess they were sort of like crackers with honey. called manna. They called it manna because it was from God. God provided. And God said, go out and get as much as you need for yourselves and your family, but don't get any more than you need. Don't get greedy. Can the children tell me what happens if they got too much? Someone tell me.
Okay.
It got old, okay. What else? Something else happened also. Anyone? Yes? It got worms in it, yes. It was infested with worms. It got old. It was disgusting because they got too much. They got greedy. It will rot, and the maggots will infest your manna. So it's only good for what we only need, what we need at the time. So consider what this means. We never have to live on yesterday's blessings. Is that what it's trying to say? They were only supposed to get what they needed for that day. And also, God's blessings are never early, but they're never late. They're always on time. Today's mercies are for today's burdens. Tomorrow's mercies will be for tomorrow's problems. Too many times we try to hang on some troubles that happened the other day that we possibly had peace about already, and then something happens and that makes us think about it again. And then we dig up those things, and we need to experience God's mercies every day because his compassions fail not. In July of 1945, shortly after leading Great Britain to a victory in World War II, Winston Churchill suffered a shocking setback when his party was defeated at the polls, bringing his time as prime minister to an end. In hoping to console him, his wife Clementine suggested that his defeat was really a blessing in disguise. She was probably thinking, well, at least it got you out of politics and now you're a free man. I don't know what she was thinking, but that's what she said. But then he said, if so, it's very well disguised, because he could not see any blessing in that whatsoever. Many of us possibly feel the same way about some of our own problems. We see trouble, but where is the blessing? All we can see is the trouble. We all wonder what will happen tomorrow. Will our health hold up? Or will we have a heart attack or a sudden stroke? What about our children? Will they serve the Lord? What if something happens to them? Who will take care of us in our old age? Getting older is something that goes through my mind at times. Singles wonder if they will ever marry. We all have concerns about our life choices, and we wonder where we're going to be in 10 years from now. Something to think about. And on that, we need to be making choices so that we have got a pretty good idea of where we're going to be. And that should be in God's will, regardless where that might take place, but to be in God's will. And that depends on the choices that we make. Let's learn from Lamentations here. God's mercies come day by day. They come when we need them, not earlier and not later. God gives us what we need today. If we need more, he will give us more. And when we need something else, he will give us that too. Nothing we really need will ever be withheld from us. So search your problems, and within them you will discover possibly the well-disguised mercies of God. And number four, what is the hope for the future? What is my hope for the future? And that comes to our last phrase there, great is thy faithfulness. This is the text that led Thomas Obadiah Grisham to write the poem that became so beloved, the beloved hymn sung in every continent. Here's a simple way to bring its truth into focus. Great is our fickleness, but great is thy faithfulness. We may grow weary, but our God does not. We may grow up, we may give up, but our God does not. So thinking about these four questions again, why doesn't God destroy me? It's because of God's great love that we are not consumed. And how do I know that God will keep on loving me? It's because his compassions fail not. When will God give me what I need? And he says, they are new every morning. Mercies are new every morning. So what is my hope of the future? Great is thy faithfulness. We can trust in God. Here's another statement from C.S. Lewis. He who has God and many other things has no more than he who has God alone. Let me do that again. He who has God and many other things has no more than he who has God alone. We get so wrapped up in the things that we have. Most of us have many other things. We have money and security, friends and family. But do you also have God in your life? If you do, then the many other things won't matter one way or the other. Really, it won't matter. If you have God and if you know Jesus Christ, you have enough because our God is faithful. We can trust him today. We can trust him tomorrow. So there is no need to fear if we are a child of God. We are in God's hands. We can trust him when we take our last breath because our God is faithful. Great is thy faithfulness. Let us kneel for prayer.